Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat's offense stalls in the second half of their loss to the Magic. We'll talk about what went wrong for Miami.
And is there something to read into Hassan Whiteside leaving the bench early after not playing the fourth quarter? Thank you so much for listening and subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. The Heat had their worst scoring half of the season, putting up just 40 total points in the second half of Tuesday night's 105-90 loss to the Magic. It seemed like the offense was humming to start the game. Whiteside was dominating early. The ball movement and shot selection were all great. And the Heat took a lead into halftime, but in the second half, it was much different. The offense just grinded to a halt. David, what do you think happened?
Well, some players kind of tailed off as far as their performance is concerned, and they started going away from what they were doing early in the first quarter. With Whiteside in particular, they were going to him, trying to get him to take advantage maybe of a defensive mismatch against Nick Vucevic, who's not known for his defense, as good a scorer as he is. Whiteside was able to get started. You know, he got off to a nice hot start, and then they kind of went away from that. Josh Richardson, you know, he picked up two early fouls. They wanted to incorporate him into the game plan, tried to go to him early and often in the third quarter, try to get him to establish a rhythm. Never quite worked out. He finished the night with just 6 points on 2 of 14 shooting. Wayne Ellington struggled from the field, as well as Roddy Magruder, who was the primary ball handler there in many situations. He turned the ball over a lot. He just didn't seem quite comfortable with his handle at any point. And it just seemed to discombobulate from there. And then let's give credit to Orlando. They're a very good defensive team. They were able to tighten things up substantially against the Heat. And they got some really good shooting from Aaron Gordon and Terrence Ross, who's like a sixth man of the year candidate. He came in and provided some nice hot shooting for them as well. And they just seemed to go on a roll there. Even when Miami was able to cut the lead to 6 midway through the fourth quarter, they never looked really into it. And then it kind of fell off towards the end of the game.
Yeah, I thought the Magic did a really nice job in that second half of not letting Miami get to their spots and not really letting them run their plays. And I thought it was pretty interesting, and I tweeted this during the game, how the whole freedom of movement rules and new emphasis of that didn't apply to this game. The refs were kind of letting them play for the most part. Miami took just 5 free throws in the game. Now, Orlando, they took 20, which is a whole lot more than what Miami got, and that was a big discrepancy in the game, but they still only took 20. You look at the free throw rates across the league, 20 is kind of low for a game. And it kind of felt to me that the refs were mostly letting these guys play, especially when, you know, Miami likes to do a lot of things like around the baseline. You know, guys like Winslow and Josh Richardson will kind of be patient with the ball over at the top of the key and you know, in like that high pick and roll area, while there's a lot of things like when Wayne Ellington is trying to run floppy or something like that along the baseline. The Magic were just sort of like stonewalling them. I saw it happen with Ellington a couple times, with Magruder a couple times, where he just couldn't get to his spot. And so I thought the Magic just did a good job of being physical with Miami, and I thought that slowed them down. I thought that just sort of got them out of rhythm. Now, we're talking a little bit now about Whiteside and how they really started going to him early in the game, and it kind of reminded me of a football game where the offensive coordinator comes out and kind of scripts the first 10 or 15 or so plays, and it kind of felt like that with Whiteside. There was definitely an effort there, and I think you're right. They were trying to attack Vucevic and maybe take Vucevic off his game a little bit so that he maybe wouldn't be even as effective on the offensive end. They tried to go at him a lot with Whiteside, and Whiteside was really effective. He made his first 5 field goals for the game, had 10 points and 5 rebounds in the first 6 minutes, but then in the next 19 minutes, only scored 2 points and had only 4 more rebounds. And I think after Spo brought him out midway through the first quarter, they never really got back into getting him those plays. And I think part of the reason, I'm kind of thinking about this as we're talking here, David, I think part of the reason is that nobody else on this team plays like Whiteside or wants to play like Whiteside. Whiteside is a very much kind of bruiser, dinosaur type of center, old school. We know how he is most effective. You get him in the ball in the post, let him kind of dance around, and hopefully it doesn't end up in a shot put. But that's in a slowed down game, that's where he plays best. And everybody else on this team wants to kind of get up and go. And when Whiteside comes out, they kind of go into that. Everybody sort of gets into their comfort zone. And so then Whiteside comes back in. It's hard for him to sort of shoehorn back into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That's fair. But I think in a night like tonight, especially when they're not getting a lot of foul calls or when the refs are allowing a certain amount of contact, maybe it kind of requires a change in the game plan where it's more about attacking the basket. I don't have the exact number of shot attempts at the rim, but it seemed like they were settling for either fadeaway jumpers or mid-range shots, even shots in the perimeter. For the disparity they had in the free throws, as only shooting 5 free throws, they did shoot 35 three-point attempts, and of those, they only made 12. So obviously, a lot of the shots along the perimeter weren't falling, but they weren't exactly attacking the basket either, and they weren't drawing the kind of necessary contact. Maybe it would have helped as far as them being able to get to the line. Maybe it would have helped to go to Whiteside, have him kind of, you know, push that or slow down that pace where he's a little bit more comfortable attacking the basket. Maybe he would have gotten more calls. Maybe it would have opened things up for others if he's being a little dominant on the inside. But unfortunately, they went away from that. I understand the concerns there because obviously if you've got only one player who likes playing that system, you can't ask the rest of the team to conform to that. But at the same time, knowing that Orlando is the team that they are defensively, where they are physical and they can keep you from getting to your spots, it might have been more effective for Spoelstra to go to Whiteside a little bit more often, particularly in the third quarter and particularly a night when Richardson was struggling as much as he was with his shot.
Yeah, Miami, 36 points in the paint in the first half, 16 in the second half.
Yeah, it was just woeful. I mean, they were selling for a lot of shots there. It was really bad.
They were. You mentioned the three-point shooting there, and not a whole lot of them were great looks. You mentioned Josh Richardson's struggles. It's been a few games now for Richardson. He had 6 points tonight, just 2 of 14 shooting, made one of just his 7 three-pointers. Really tough night for him. But you even go back to the Utah game. He had 16 points, sure, but it took him 16 shots. He was 4 of 16. He hasn't shot better than 40% from the field, David, since November 23rd in that win against Chicago.
Yeah.
Where he was 10 of 16 for 27 points. Now, 10 of 16 for 27 points was what we were accustomed to seeing from him in the first week or so of the season. He's kind of fallen off here a little bit. I think it's a little bit of defenses keying in on him. They're starting to put their best defender on him and stuff like that. There's definitely part of the game plan that has affected Josh Richardson. But for the most part, and you got to kind of appreciate that he's still putting the shots up, right? I mean, in the last few games, 14 shots, 16 shots, 22 shots, 17 shots, 19 shots. Like, he's at least still being aggressive, and he's able to kind of put points up despite the low field goal percentage. But you'd like to see the efficiency get up, obviously.
Yeah, I think he's forcing the issue. And I got to be honest with you, I think the more we hear about how difficult it is for him to transition into that alpha role on this team, the more obvious it becomes that he's struggling psychologically with the impact of trying to be the lead scorer, primary ball handler, primary defender.
I think another part of that, I think you're right. I think another part of that is that his numbers, his stats bear that out, where he struggles when he's not playing next to another ball handler, primary type ball handler.
I was going
to
say.
And Roddy Magruder. Magruder is not that guy.
No, he's not.
He's got the lob situation with Whiteside, but other than that, he's not necessarily leading the offense. And with Winslow coming off the bench and kind of the first half minutes a lot of times are staggered between Richardson and Winslow, and obviously Goran Dragic not being in the game, we'll talk about Dragic more in more depth later on, but it's Richardson, you're right. He's been asked to be the leading scorer, the leading ball handler a lot of times, and at least in the starting unit before Winslow comes in. It's tough. It's mentally or not, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So, no, you wanted to add to that?
No, I want to go on a little bit about Goran. I know it's a question that we're going to answer from our listeners later on, but I think it really shows how essential he is to Miami's offense.
Mm-hmm. Or just a point guard in general. And look, things don't really get easier for the Heat. We talked about this four-game homestand being pretty important for them. They ended up going 2-2 on the homestand. I think if you kind of look at this from the Heat's eyes, they probably were hoping for 3-1. So 2-2 is a bit of a disappointment. And like I said, it just doesn't get easier. It's a 6-game road trip into the Western Conference. You play at Phoenix this Friday. That should be a win, especially if Devin Booker and TJ Warren aren't back. But we're not sure about their status yet because they were only recently ruled out for their game tonight. Then they go play the Clippers, LeBron and the Lakers, the Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz, the surging Memphis Grizzlies, and Anthony Davis and the New Orleans Pelicans, who I don't think that the Heat are going to beat twice. So that's a really, really tough road trip. So it's not getting easier is what I'm saying.
No, absolutely not. I mean, games on the road are difficult. And for this team that has shown a decided lack of heart and intensity, trying to muster the energy when you're away from home, when you're away from your comfort zone. Not that the home advantage has been there for Miami this season, but it's certainly more difficult to pull out victories against road teams, especially really good ones, as they're facing on this road trip.
Speaking of a lack of heart, Hassan Whiteside, visibly frustrated, got up off the bench and headed to the locker room before the game was over. After not playing at all in the fourth quarter, is this another Whiteside fit or something else? We'll talk about that after this break. We've got a few more of your Twitter questions to get to later on, but let's get to this first one from JNico20, who writes in, Whiteside has played his three best games of the season. His play was otherwise solid against the New Orleans Pelicans when he couldn't check Anthony Davis effectively. He didn't play in the fourth tonight, and he headed for the locker room early as the game slipped away. Was that the end? I'm assuming Jeff is talking about the end of Whiteside's tenure in Miami, maybe?
Yeah, that seems about right. I think we're kind of jumping to conclusions, and it's certainly a dramatic exit for him. It's a petulant display, I'll be 100% honest with you. I think he might be frustrated, and I know you've got a quote here from Eric Spoelstra after the game as far as Whiteside's departure.
Yeah, I mean, when Spo was asked by reporters about why Whiteside left the bench early, Spo basically just said, he's probably extremely upset like we all are. Yeah. And Eric Spoelstra was visibly upset during this game. I mean, a lot of Spoelstra's tells are when he starts rubbing the forehead, pacing back and forth maniacally, those were all on full display tonight. So Spo was obviously frustrated too. But you could tell Whiteside was like, dude, did you see how I started this game and you're not playing me in this fourth quarter? And Spo probably turned around to say, well, I saw how, the other 19 minutes you played, which was basically nothing. So I think I'm with you. Dwayne Wade was asked about it after the game and sort of said, oh, Whiteside told me he had to go to the bathroom. And it's just like, dude, no. Hold it then.
Yeah. That's just ridiculous. I mean, there were 40 something seconds left in the game. I know there's the customary meet and greet with opposing players and talking and chatting and stuff like that. But Whiteside, I think it's a little unprofessional. I think it's also petulant. He's obviously frustrated. And I think they're making excuses for his behavior because, they don't know what else to do. He is the biggest baby in the room and they're not quite sure how to comfort him and make him happy. If he wants 40 touches a game, he's not going to get that. And I think it's just realistic for him to understand that. And unfortunately hasn't come to that conclusion. He's not playing with the same kind of intensity we saw the other night against Rudy Gobert. He's not mustering that same energy, taking on the personal challenge. I mean, look, he's facing Nikola Vucevic, who's not a great defensive center, who's probably going to get all-star votes because he's playing so well on the offensive end, and he's making much more of a contribution on a better team in Orlando. So he should look to the opposing players as inspiration. It shouldn't be on a night-to-night basis. It shouldn't be on a specific matchup where he feels energized enough to give a good performance.
He had that one, and Vucevic has come a long way offensively, but mostly it's because he's become such a good passer.
Sure.
Out of the post, and Whiteside he did attempt that pass to Wayne Ellington early on. It was the right read.
Okay, how about the one right pass? Play? Whiteside at the top of the key where Wade was trying to force him the ball after coming around on a curl on a pick and roll. And Whiteside just kind of had it sail out of bounds through his fingers. You remember that one play? I can't remember what quarter that was. I think it was late in the second.
I mean, but to go back to the Ellington play, it was a bad pass, right? But it was the right pass, but it was a bad pass. But he never went, it was almost as if, okay, I tried the one pass, it didn't work, that's it. He didn't pass it again for the rest of the game. And it's just if you try it once, it doesn't work. You made the right play. It was an unfortunate pass. It happens. But you got to keep trying to move the ball. You talk about looking across the court and looking at the guy who's probably going to make the All-Star team this year. Well, it's not just because he's hitting fall-away jumpers from 18 feet out. It's because he's averaging 4 assists a game. And he's able to stay on the floor longer because of it. To go back to this question, was that the end? No. If him basically demanding a trade after a playoff game, or what was it, after late in the season last year, wasn't enough to get him traded, then it's not the end. That said, the Heat have, according to reports here, have been trying to move him or have at least been open to move him or shopped him over the summer. There's no takers.
Yeah, there's
like, I don't know what the end means. I mean, we could talk about the wave and stretch thing. I could start talking about that again. But I don't even like, I just don't see the Heat doing that. So I don't think it's the end, unfortunately. And it's not because the Heat don't want to move on from Whiteside. I think they would prefer to move on from Whiteside. They just can't.
Yeah.
They just can't.
I think, look, we saw something similar, not similar exactly, but we saw something, you know, analogous in Chicago play out where Fred Hoiberg was asked to coach a roster with talent that didn't match his vision or style of play, the kind of offense he wanted to implement. And I think we're seeing that too with in Miami, where I think Eric Spoelstra would prefer to play a fast-paced offense with Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk stretching the floor and creating offense for others, where they'd want to push the pace with guys like Winslow and Richardson and, of course, Goran Dragic, assuming he'd be healthy. And then they've got this man in the middle who's making $20-something million and clogging up everything and changing the dynamic of how Spoelstra wants to run his team. So I'm not sure. This is the front office failing Eric Spoelstra as a coach.
And look, Whiteside is basically playing the first 6 minutes of the first quarter, the first 6 minutes of the third quarter, and he's getting 6 minutes somewhere in the second quarter. And he doesn't play in the fourth quarter. I mean, but like you're right. Spo wants to play faster, just like the rest of this team wants to play faster. Whiteside just doesn't fit this roster right now. And that's why Spo plays him for the first 6 minutes. He runs some of those scripted plays to him. And then after those 6 minutes, takes him out and gets to what he wants to do. And that was effective in the first half. Like, you can't blame Spo for that. Like, that's what worked. And Whiteside was effective in those first 6 minutes. I think that's what we're going to keep seeing going forward. And because Bam and Olynyk, that front court duo, has been really effective for Miami. And we're probably going to keep seeing that going into the fourth quarters here and during the important stretches of games, and even more so early on in the games, you know, just getting to that lineup earlier so that the rest of the offense is sort of click into place, because everybody else is also more like Justice Winslow can't function with Hassan Whiteside. It's just never worked. Whiteside just like Winslow is bad enough at finishing again at the rim, and having Whiteside clog the paint just doesn't help matters. But if you put Bam Adebayo out there, who's able to stretch the floor with what he's able to do with dribble handoffs, and Kelly Olynyk, obviously his ability to stretch the floor, then all of a sudden Winslow becomes much more effective. And we're seeing that as he's coming off the bench, it's just working. So I don't know.
Let me. I just want to add something on a complete different tangent here. I just got a Twitter notification saying that the Heat is going to practice tomorrow at noon, and I just want to say that after a loss like tonight, after a game like tonight, where everybody's beat down on the way to a 6-game road trip, what the hell is the Heat doing holding a practice tomorrow? Like that is just ridiculous to me. Like I don't want to rally against this team. Because, you know, obviously we're covering this team, but they need a break. They need something, a mental vacation. You know, you've talked about this in the past, how essential these kinds of things are. This team does not look like it's ready and energized and ready to go on a 6-game road trip, particularly after a beatdown the way they took from the Orlando Magic. The last thing they need is to go and trudge their asses back into the American Airlines Arena for a 3-hour practice before heading on a long, grueling road trip.
I'm with you. I think that's something that it's probably a reaction by Spo, where he's like, we got to fix this, and the only way to do it is to work through it. And it's like, well, maybe it's not. Maybe the only way to do it is to give these guys – look at what Dwayne Wade did. He took 2 weeks off and came back as fresh as ever. And, you know, not everybody's 36 years old Dwayne Wade, but I think it helps. Like, these players, it helps them. But especially a banged-up roster as it is. We'll talk about Spoelstra's lineup decisions, which is a thing fans like to complain about. After this break. All right, a few more of these Twitter questions. Let's get to this one from Billy, who writes in, skipped the last two games and they won. Watched the last 5 minutes of this game and they lost. This team is just disappointing this season, especially without Goran. David, I wanted to use this question as a launching pad for you to talk about Goran, because I know you like to talk about him. But also, I want to blame Billy a little bit. Stop watching the Heat games, man.
Yeah. Just why watch the last 5 minutes? Like, not that it really mattered, I think. At the same time, they were pretty much in a hole before that. Although, they did cut the lead.
They made it close.
Kelly Olynyk.
It's Billy's fault.
Thanks a lot, Billy. You're making this podcast much more difficult for us now. In all seriousness, that deficit, the energy levels, everything else, Whiteside's petulance. I mean, a lot of it was playing out there. in the fourth quarter. And look, again, Orlando isn't as bad as they've been in the past. I know you can look around the lower bowl of the American Airlines Arena. A lot of people don't care too much to see the Orlando Magic play, but they're a good team, a better team than they've been in the past, and they get some nice contributions from a number of players. But enough about the Magic. Let's focus on what really matters, Goran Dragic. I think you look at the way the Heat have played without him, and yeah, I'm not feeling as bad as I did about his All-Star selection last year, to be honest with you. I know a lot of players around the Eastern Conference begrudge Goran for making the All-Star Conference. One, because he's European. Two, because he's white.
Well, mostly the guys in the Western Conference too, who didn't get on their Western Conference team. Guys like not Mike Conley got hurt, but guys like Chris Paul, who didn't make the Western Conference team, but Dragic did.
Yeah, so what? The reality is that, look, there's no way of really pointing out to a team's most valuable player. I think you can change those statistics or narratives around to fit whatever idea you want to. But let's be honest, it seems like Goran clearly is a huge factor in Miami's offense. And for somebody, it's a trickle-down effect. Not only is he their most consistent scorer, which that has been the case for a number of seasons now, but he does alleviate the pressure from so many other players that aren't quite ready to be an alpha-type player. Look, we force Roddy Magruder into this role where he's a secondary ball handler and ask him to create offense. It's something he can do in spots, but not consistently asked to do this. Ellington should not be starting. I know his defense hasn't been as bad as it could have been, but he's limited in what he can do offensively. If he puts the ball down, it's either a turnover or a missed shot at the rim. It's not really effective for him. He's a spot-up shooter. He's a guy who can, you know, catch this ball on the run and let it fly. But that is a lot easier, again, when you have to worry about Goran Dragic driving to the rim or shooting from the perimeter himself, something he can do pretty efficiently.
Mm-hmm. And look, with Justice Winslow coming off the bench, it is giving them that one guy. Like, I thought Winslow's command of the offense was really, really good tonight.
He was great.
Like, he was reading and reacting. He was anticipating where his guys were going to be. He was controlling not only the Miami's offense but the Orlando Magic's defense for a lot of that game. I was really impressed with what I saw. But that's one guy. And when he's not on the floor, the offense sputtered. Like, it just didn't work. And you need multiple guys who could do that. And you're right. Like, Roddy Magruder has shown flashes, but he's not a guy who leads the offense. He's just kind of, like, gets the ball driving and can find other guys in a sort of more of an improv sort of way. But he's not necessarily the captain, you know? And you need those guys. Josh Richardson, we mentioned, like, if you're asking him to be this 20 points per game scorer, well, then you can't also ask him to be the guy who's getting the offense into motion. And so I think not having Goran Dragic there really does hurt this team. Now, I'll say this. I haven't been impressed with Goran this season so far. He does look a step slow as a scorer, but he is in control of the offense. He is valuable in that way. I do wonder what the difference between Goran Dragic to replacement-level point guard would be versus what the Heat are basically at right now. Is Goran Dragic to no point guard at all? I still think no point guard to replacement-level point guard would be a huge upgrade for this team, but I don't know where that player fits in. We get questions all the time, should Miami go after a point guard? I don't know where that player plays. This team is too deep already. You know, you'd think maybe Dwayne Wade could be that guy. I actually think that's probably the answer here. Like, you can't start Dwayne Wade in Wayne Ellington's place, but you might want to think about it if it seems like Dragic is coming back. Like, you can't start Dwayne Wade long term, but maybe if Dragic looks like he's on his way back, you could sort of get away for the first few minutes of the half with Dwayne Wade starting there.
Yeah, that's an option. The other answer is also Deion Waiters, should he ever return to healthy play.
Who returned to the bench tonight? He watched the game from the bench, which was, I think, a good.
I didn't even see him there, right? Was he really?
Yeah. So he hasn't been playing. He hasn't been sitting on the bench for these games, and a lot of people have wondered why. It's probably because it's an ankle surgery that he's recovering from. And a lot of times, those guys. We had Michael Pina on, talked about Magruder's leg injury. He sat in the back just because it was uncomfortable for him, and dangerous for him to sit on the bench, which is usually a cramped space. But Waiters was on the bench tonight in a sweet green blazer.
Did he look loaded?
It was a slimming blazer. I don't know.
Well, I was forced to watch the Magic broadcast, so they didn't pan to Waiters at any point, and I didn't notice them there. So,
all right, last question. This comes from our friends over at the Heat Beat. They asked us, the closing lineup is one I like, but they weren't generating great shots consistently. Curious what you guys think. That closing lineup, the fourth quarter was a little bit, they subbed in guys in and out, but mostly Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk. Wayne Ellington, Justice Winslow, and Roddy Magruder. Dwayne Wade got in there for the fourth quarter a little bit too. Did you have any problems with that? That I liked that as a closing group. I didn't really know who else you would play in that situation anyway.
Yeah, it seemed like Spoelstra was looking for solutions. I mean, the answer wasn't Whiteside, that's for sure. And they had to do something to kind of make up for points.
And the key is playing the three young guys, which is what they did. Richardson didn't play a whole lot in that fourth quarter, but he was in there. Giving minutes to those three guys, Richardson, Winslow, Bam Adebayo, specifically Winslow and Bam, who played really well. I mean, Bam, we didn't even talk about him. I mean, just jumping over the basket several times today. I mean, this was one of the best performances I've seen from him all season. There was a one play where he blocked, left his feet, jumped up and blocked a shot with both hands, came back down, ran across the court, and then was able to get there for a putback dunk on the other end. That is insane athleticism, to be able to leave your feet and get a block and then end up at the rim and over the rim on the other end of the floor within just a few seconds is insane athleticism. I have no problem with the closing lineup.
No, I think it's great. I think it should have been more effective, but again, with that deficit and despite the fact that they were cut the lead down to six, it was a little too little too late.
Hey, and look, I mean, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose and get your young guys' experience.
So. Not according to Hassan Winston.
Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.